Awesome. All right, Lang.net 2009. Please introduce yourselves. People know Mads, but you can say your name again.
Mads Torgersen.
Emmanuel Staff, working for Eiffel Software on the Eiffel language.
Perfect. So just for people in the audience who aren't familiar with Eiffel, can you give us maybe a two-minute?
So Eiffel was created by Bertrand Meyer in 1985-86. It's a pure object-oriented language. It has its major feature is designed by contract, and it supports many things like genericity, multiple inheritance. It was garbage collector collected back then in 85. What else?
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm picking up a lot of stuff. Already shortly after C++ came out, we all realized that multiple inheritance was a really bad idea.
That's because C++ did it wrong.
Really?
Yeah. In Eiffel, multiple inheritance is very easy to manipulate and to understand.
Okay.
So one of the issues that you have with multiple inheritance is when you inherit from two different abstractions and you have a conflict on the name. Eiffel has a very simple mechanism, which is to basically rename one of those routines that conflict. So if you have a class A which has a feature F, a class B that has a feature F too, when you inherit from both from A and B in the same class, you say, oh, the F from A, let's rename it G.
Okay.
Now you have two features, F and G, in the descendant, and there is no conflict. Very simple. When you have two features who are sharing the same signature, as long you can merge them into just one.
Okay.
So very simple again.
So if you have like diamond inheritance where they originally come from the same place, they go to two different
names.
Classes and come back in. You can
so if they come back with a different name and you have to either what we call select one, mm-hmm. to be the one that will be used for polymorphism.
Right,
or you can merge them back together in just one routine.
Okay.
If they have the same name, but the implementation is different, that is to say both part of the diamond had generated a new routine, what happens is that you have, again, to either merge them or select one of them as your implementation for that descendant.
I see. So when you merge, you simply... That's where you have the responsibility to say how is the result going to fulfill the obligations from
the parent,
whatever
yeah.
it inherits.
Yeah, that's exactly
awesome.
The same.
Okay, so it's really not that hard. It's just that we got it wrong in the rest of the world.
Yeah,
practically,
yeah. That's
cool.
And what you have in Java and C Sharp is that you have multiple inheritance of interface, but you lose a lot because, for example, in Eiffel, a basic type like integer. Inherit from two classes. One is comparable and the other one is numeric. And if you don't have multiple inheritance, what you end up having to do is reinventing the wheel in the descendant. So if you take the case of the .NET high comparable, basically if you want to implement less than or greater than or less or equal than, you have to implement four routines. In Eiffel, you implement just one, which is less than, and the three others can be implemented in terms of less than.
Mm-hmm.
So as a descendant, you only have to implement just one routine, not four. So it's again, you save on code, on time to implement and in code duplication.
So people who were just kids back when Eiffel came out, they run around now saying, what you need is some people call it mix-in, some people, different names for different things. They have things that say this replaces multiple inheritance, but because multiple inheritance is bad. Can you really just do the same things as they can and have been able to do that all along?
I mean, I'm not too familiar with mix-in, but as far as I understand, it's more like a runtime thing. It's not really at compile time. So at compile time, you have multiple inheritance, and I guess... You can use mixing to fake multiple inheritance at runtime, but
mm-hmm.
I don't think how they will do it at compile time, though.
Okay. So Eiffel. So you make a point of Eiffel having been there for like almost 25 years now.
Yeah.
It's almost like celebrating an anniversary here next year. So how on earth can that be relevant to us today? Hasn't the world moved on? And yes, it was new and groundbreaking back then, but now it's kind of sort of old-fashioned, or like what keeps it relevant?
So I think it's relevant because all the ideas that you find in Eiffel are still not found in other mainstream languages. Those mainstream languages are catching up. C-sharp has recently added genericity, for example. Eiffel had it for a long time. Same thing for garbage collector. Until Java came along, it was not that common to have a garbage collected language. So many of the ideas introduced by Eiffel have been taken by other approaches. But we are still, I think, a step ahead in a few areas. Mm-hmm. And one of the main areas where there is really no one catching up on us is design by contract.
Okay.
And one of the also new features that was recently added a few years back is what I just presented at this Lang.net symposium, is the void safety mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely a unique thing that you can find in Eiffel and not yet in other mainstream languages.
Right. So let's talk about some of those features. If we start chronologically with the design by contract, that was sort of really one of the things that Eiffel was launched with. Now, we're sort of in the .NET world. We're trying now to ease into this maybe sort of by having a library for code contracts that's also being presented here at Lang.net, but which is not integrated into any of our major languages. It's more like an API. So are there important differences, you think, in those two approaches?
I think the main aspect for having support of contract in the language is that you don't have any real disconnect. I don't know too much about code contracts and how it works, but basically the contracts are there to verify your code, but it's not just that, it's also documentation. So it makes your code self-documented. And this is really important because you don't want a disconnect between the requirements and the implementation, which has been the case in the before Eiffel was invented. So if you use contract correctly, you guarantee that regardless of what the implementation does, you know the precondition, the postcondition, and thanks to that, long-term benefit of using design by contract in your code is huge. Because let's say I was someone in your team disappeared and he had the full knowledge of his code, but he did a good job at contracting his code. Then the next guy come along and he has no problem catching up. And that's also one thing about Eiffel is that it's the syntax of Eiffel is very clear. Anyone can read it. There is no symbolism at all. And therefore, I've seen it many times, is that you have interns coming to our company and starting to do very important stuff to our compiler or environment very quickly, even though the environment is pretty big in terms of size. I mean, the Eiffel Studio environment that we produce is about 6,500 classes of Eiffel classes, correspond about to 1.5 2 million lines of code, and really, someone coming up in our development team can be very efficient programming for Eiffel Studio within a week or two. Because the abstractions and the tool itself that we produce make it very easy to browse the classes, find the interaction between the two, and so on.
Cool. So that's like a huge code base you have there. So thinking about assigned by contract, one of the criticisms that I sometimes hear is that, it's nice for toy examples, but it doesn't really scale up to real applications. What are your experiences there?
So it depends what you mean by scaling up. You mean the runtime performance? Or
no, I more mean like that it's just not usable as a methodology. That's at least the
so I think it's a wrong assumption to make. What it is, what the contract brings to you is that you have to think a little bit more about what you are doing. So instead of going straight to the implementation and code your way in, you actually have to think a little bit more about your coding and especially think about the assumptions you are making, especially on arguments, but also on the state of the object before you actually call a routine, and also the guarantees that you are going to provide to the caller. And if you do that in a consistent manner, yes, you think more, but the quality of your code is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And the long-term benefit is that you have less bugs to find in the future.
So maybe you could tell us a little more about how contracts actually work as a language feature. Like, what do they do for you? What, like, when are they checked and that kind of stuff?
So the
technical background.
So contracts has an overhead because at runtime we actually monitor contracts. So we have a different kind of contract in Eiffel. Basically, you can see them as three major type of contract. You have precondition and postconditions for routines, and you have class invariants. You also have less used, but you also have a check statement, which is the equivalent of a C assert. And we also have a contract for a loop. So you have an invariant of a loop, and you have a variant of a loop. So to ensure that your loop is actually going to finish, which is quite important. So, but let's focus on the class invariant, precondition, and postcondition. And so the actually, I forgot your question.
Well, so the question was about how it works. So
let's so you have precondition, postcondition, invariant, and basically you can say, okay, let's check everything. So when you say check everything, that before every routine call, we are going to check the precondition and the invariant.
So it's checked at runtime.
Yeah. Yes. And then you execute your routine, and at the end of the routine, we check again the invariant to make sure it's still satisfied, and we also check the postcondition.
I see.
And you do that all the time. But you don't have, let's say I use a component from some third party. Actually, those guys must have done their job right, so you trust them. And as a user, you only need to enable precondition checking. Mm-hmm. As long as you pass them the correct arguments, you're sure that they are going to satisfy their postcondition and invariants.
I see.
And so by doing that, you can actually reduce the cost of checking assertions at runtime. And having your code is fully asserted, so you check pre, postcondition, and invariant. Mm-hmm. But the component that you are using, because you chose them, you can just check the precondition.
Because you chose to trust
them. Yeah.
Okay. So you have a flexibility in how much
check. And you can override those settings. I mean, mm-hmm. you can say, I don't check any assertion, or I just check assertions on certain classes or a certain set of classes and so on. So you have very flexible, and that's where you don't have to pay much of performance penalty. In practice, most of our users, they either deliver the final product without assertion checking, because they have done enough internal testings that they estimate that they don't need it, or some actually generate a binary that has a precondition enabled all the time.
Okay.
And it doesn't have a huge impact on performance. I mean, usually it ranges between a few percent to 25%, depending on the kind of assertion precondition you are checking.
Right. The thing I notice is that in practice, if I look at a piece of C# code, for instance, it always does precondition checking anyway. There's just no language feature for it. So you start out looking at all your arguments and saying, if this one is null, throw an exception. If this one is null, throw this exception. If this one is less than zero, and so we actually put the preconditions in, but they're just not called out with syntax. It's harder maybe to identify.
Yeah, I mean, actually,
discipline for
a few years back, we had a tool that, forgot the name of the tool we developed, but basically it was looking at .NET assemblies and extracted a contract from them.
Okay.
By just looking at the, exactly what you said, that if arguments equal null, then you throw an exception, as we turn that into a precondition, and you find out that the MS Corlib, because that's what we studied, was full of useful contracts, mm-hmm. but they were kind of hidden, and you had to look at the documentation.
I see.
Because Eiffel contracts are part of the code. I mean, you don't need to look somewhere else; it's in the code, so you get the documentation for free.
I see. Okay, so this other thing you mentioned with the void.
Void safety.
Void safety.
Yeah.
What's that about?
So in Eiffel, void means most people know about as null in other languages. So basically, the idea behind void safety is that when you do a call, x.f, one of the problems that you may encounter in a real-life application is that x is not attached to an object. It's mm-hmm. null. So what you get when you execute x.f is a null reference exception. So void safety aims at removing those kind of errors. And the idea is that the compiler should tell you when you do x.f if it's going to succeed at runtime or not. And so we've put in place a a set of mechanisms to the language that will tell the compiler that whenever you write x.f, if it's valid or not. And if the compiler decides to reject it, it's because there is a likelihood possibility that at runtime it will cause a null reference exception.
So you can essentially eradicate all null reference errors from the language.
That's pretty, yeah.
That's interesting because we, on the C-sharp design team, we racked our brains on whether we could do something like that, whether we could introduce non-null versions of our reference types. And one thing that we found was really, really hard was to do it in a way that keeps old code still valid, because what you essentially want to do is to take stuff that people could do before and start rejecting it at compile time. Because that's what where the safety comes from, is that this unsafe code is no longer accepted. So do you have like a compatibility?
So we have a lot of code that was written when this mechanism did not exist, so yeah. We had to migrate it. And during that migration, we have actually refined the mechanisms. But basically, one of the things we have is the notion of attached types, which are types that are guaranteed to be always attached to an object. We have detachable type for all the rest. So with the typing system, you can actually do a lot of stuff. And the other thing that we have put in place is a notion of what we call the CAPS. So it's the acronym for Certified Attachment Pattern.
Okay.
And the idea is that I'll write an example on the board. Is that when you write if, which is something, so I use the Eiffel syntax there.
I think we can live with that.
when you write this, which happens in your code, I mean, you said in MS Core Lib, you do a check on the argument to make sure it's not null. Okay, you do this. Mm-hmm. And if x has certain properties to be, let's say it's a variable, and if you have instruction here, that which guarantees that the variable is never set to null, mm-hmm. then the compiler is going to infer that x.f is valid. Okay. And so by having a set of caps, the compiler can actually reuse existing code to a certain extent, and you don't have to write too much protection without modifying existing code. Mm-hmm. And then we have invented a new construct, what we call the object test. And basically, if before you did x.f and you had no surrounding context to tell you that x was not a void, then you have to use the object test. And the object test is you test basically. So the object test is useful because x is limited to a variable, mm-hmm. An argument or local. It can't be a full-fledged expression because an expression can return twice a different value.
Yes.
So and the object test basically stores the result of that computation into a read-only variable, and then you can use this variable afterward.
Right, because I was also going to ask you about, and maybe that is, I don't want to whole can of worms on this question, but like I would be worried about someone concurrently modifying X from another place.
Yeah, so that's in this particular case, we only allow it for X is a local variable or an argument.
Okay.
If it's an attribute, it doesn't work.
Okay.
Because the attribute could change either by the lines before the call to F, or by a different thread.
I see. Yeah. And when you say attribute, that's what
what we call fields. Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
It's like maybe this is a final question. One thing I noticed is that Eiffel programmers have a different terminology for everything
than the rest
of the world. Where does that come from?
I think you should ask a question to Bertrand. Bertrand Meyer, who is the original author of the language, uh-huh. really didn't like. At the time, I don't think there was too much. Standardization on the names like
right.
method and stuff like that. So he came up with a consistent way of naming things,
mm-hmm.
and it's very simple. And so you like a C sharp, you always call like an instance method, an instance field, and stuff like that. And so in Eiffel, it's very simple. You have the notion of class types. Because there is, especially now you have genericity, so you understand that the type is not a class.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, it was confusing people. We have features. Features is made of routines or attributes, or the other way to see it is commands and queries.
Okay, so features are members. in our speak.
Yeah.
And
attributes are fields.
Attributes are fields, and then you have
routines which are methods.
Which are methods, which can be either queries or
commands.
Or commands.
So, and a query, that's one thing that I didn't mention. It's what we have in Eiffel, which we call the uniform access principle. Mm-hmm. Basically, a query, being it a field or a function, it doesn't matter to the client. So in Eiffel, actually, we don't have, in C Sharp, when you have a query, You always put the parentheses here, even if it doesn't have arguments.
I see.
In Eiffel, no. I mean, in Eiffel, it's just F, regardless F being a field or a function.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter for the user of your class that how it's implemented.
So this is another place where, like, I remember self-boasting, the self-language boasting in the early 90s that they have uniform access from between methods and fields, and that was already in Eiffel at the time too.
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah, and that's also one thing that you have a lot in with properties is that you have a getter and a setter. Mm-hmm. So in C# it's kind of nicer than in. But if you look at a lot of Java programming, they do get X.
Yes.
And set X maybe. In Eiffel we only have X, which is whatever it is. And we have a setter, which usually we call it set X, mm-hmm. but we don't need this get underscore thing. It's useless. And because what happened in the end is that those properties are implemented most of the time using a private field. Mm-hmm. In Eiffel, it's a public field, but in Eiffel you cannot write an attribute if you are not the class itself. So you can't in Eiffel if you have an attribute. And you do, so my class, so x.f colon equal a value. Mm-hmm. If f is an attribute, this is rejected by the compiler.
Okay, so this is like small talk. All fields or whatever we call them, all...
It's private to you. So only the instance within itself can modify the field.
So you have to be explicit about what part of my state do I want to expose to the rest of the world.
So it doesn't matter that F is a public attribute. Anyone can access it, but only yourself can modify it. So you don't have to do this pattern of having get F, which basically returns the internal F that you might have somewhere. So it's much simpler and easier to understand. This, you can actually write this in Eiffel, but then it goes like the properties in C#, is that actually it transforms into x.setf of x of v. So you can do that, but by default, if you don't have what we call an assigner, you are not allowed to assign directly to a field.
So is it the case that you can't actually really write ugly code in Eiffel?
if you try to do your best, you can write ugly code.
Okay.
But if you just try to program correctly, I think the readability of the Eiffel code is pretty high, and much higher than anything else I've seen.
So is there a notion of programming correctly in Eiffel that's different from other languages, or is it the same kind of virtues that you espouse?
Could you restate the...
Does Eiffel have its own notion of what a good program is? Or is that similar to other languages?
So we have a style guideline that we like people and we actually enforce in our libraries that we provide to our users. And they actually tend to be well written so that actually people copy us on and. When you look at a library from different people, you actually feel like, oh, it's like it was written by the same person because they follow the guidelines pretty strictly, even though we don't enforce anything. Mm-hmm. It's just that people like to write nice code, so we have proper indentation, always have comments to features, have contracts. I mean, if you have an Eiffel code without contract, you can ask yourself questions about the quality of the code and stuff like that.
Okay, so I think this will be the last question, but so there's like, there's more Java and C# programmers out there, let's face it, than there are Eiffel programmers. So how do you work with the rest of the world? Is there an Eiffel on .NET, for instance?
So we have an Eiffel for .NET compiler since 99, 2000.
Okay.
So we have been a .NET citizen for a long time. We have, before that, Eiffel had an external mechanism, and this mechanism lets you use C, C++ code within Eiffel. So the idea we had is basically very clever, I think, is, okay, it's you want to start to use Eiffel, but you don't want to throw or to rewrite your C and C++ code. So basically we say, doesn't matter, you take your C, C++ code, and you wrap it into Eiffel classes, and you actually add contracts to your C and C++ code.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's very easy to do. And then you can start building your Eiffel code and reusing the C and C++ code. Mm-hmm. I remember a project we did with HP about 10 years ago. And they did exactly this. And they found there was some contract failure. Turned out it was a bug in the chip.
Cool.
So it was pretty,
yeah.
So putting contracts on stuff which doesn't have contract is actually a good thing.
Okay. Can I do a similar thing on .NET?
So no, at the moment when you, if you want to import a .NET assembly, we don't put contracts on it. But if you want, you can wrap, you can write a wrapper.
Okay.
So instead of directly calling to C Sharp, you call to the Eiffel class, which wraps the C Sharp class, and then you can put the contract there.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks.
Thanks.